believe his word, but they'll always look at it through that lens of relationship or experience or results. And they hate tradition. You know, they want to get out with the old and in with the new. It's because we've been so conditioned to look for results and to look for relationships. And that's why that's why the church is being so perfectly set up for the Antichrist. Is because, you know, some guy's going to hop on the scene here and start working miracles, call them results, if you wish, call them experience. But the end result is they're going to fall for that, and everybody's going to be one big, happy, disobedient family. And so we'll all have relationships because we simply set the Word of God aside for the two things that mean so much to us. But it boils down to believing God, because that's what the problem was in the garden. You know, they, Adam and Eve first believed God, but then Eve took of the fruit, listened to the serpent, and all of a sudden she didn't really believe God anymore. You know, she started believing in other potential things, other benefits, other rewards, other results. And when she did this, it became a curse unto her. And then, of course, Adam came along and decided that, well, let's see, I know what God said. He told me himself, and he said, don't touch the tree, knowledge of good and evil. Well, my wife, the woman I love, the only other relationship I have here, she took of that fruit. So now I have a choice. Should I go with God or should I go with the woman? Well, he made his choice. He chose the human relationship. And the church has been struggling with this ever since. You know, they want that relationship and they want those results. But to do it, they have to abandon the Word of God.
You know, one of the questions I get all the time is, why would pastors do this? Why would they lead their church? Do they, you know, when they begin these programs, what do they understand?
Expressed on tonight's Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show are the opinions of neither this station nor its sponsors. In fact, they're not necessarily the opinions of Radio Liberty or of Freedom 21 Santa Cruz. The views expressed by the host are those of the host. Also, the opinions expressed by callers and guests are theirs. Whether you agree or disagree, please join in. To participate, you can call during caller segments at 888-24-LIBERTY. That's 888-245-4237. Or you can go to our online audience participation center at www.freedom21santacruz.net/radio. That's freedom21santacruz.net/radio. Now let's start advancing freedom. While some of our affiliate stations take a commercial break, let me take a few moments to tell the rest of you a bit about Freedom 21 Santa Cruz. Freedom 21 Santa Cruz is a freedom policy center that celebrates the principles of self-governance and individual liberty which inspired the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution of the United States of America. It's a group of individuals who advance the freedom of all by promoting and strengthening the practice of constitutional administration in local, state, and national government. The Freedom 21 Santa Cruz mission is to advance the principles of freedom to individuals, community, and government through public discourse, community outreach, and grassroots education programs. Freedom 21 Santa Cruz participants include people from all political parties, religions, races, and backgrounds who are united in the pursuit of individual liberty and the protection of our U.S. constitutional republic. Objectives of Freedom 21 Santa Cruz and its participants include the following. Focus public attention on the value of the freedoms guaranteed to Americans by the Constitution of the United States of America, and encourage individual and community interest in protecting those freedoms. Provide opportunities for political discourse among organization membership and the community. Promote and strengthen government responsiveness to the principles of freedom. Educate the public about local, national, and international threats to individual freedom and the U.S. Constitutional Republic. Invite Americans to unite against the advance of international collectivist movements that cause poverty, oppression, and a degraded earth. And to create a model for successfully promoting and ensuring U.S. constitutional government in a local community. To find out how you can donate to or participate in Freedom 21 Santa Cruz, please log on to freedom21santacruz.net or call 831-684-2232. You might be wondering if Freedom 21 Santa Cruz is a liberal or a conservative organization. Are they left or right, Republican or Democrat? But you'll find that none of these one-dimensional labels applies to Freedom 21 Santa Cruz, nor to many of its participants. Freedom 21 Santa Cruz dialogue doesn't take place in a left-right, liberal-conservative dialectic, but on a spectrum between liberty and tyranny. Freedom 21 Santa Cruz participants include people from all political parties, religions, races, and backgrounds who are united in the pursuit of individual liberty and the protection of our U.S. Constitutional Republic. To find out how you can donate to or participate in Freedom 21 Santa Cruz, please log on to freedom21santacruz.net or call 831-684-2232. Policies, procedures, and laws enacted by local government and non-government organizations in the name of diversity, community, and earth are diminishing individual liberty, degrading ecology, and threatening human life and happiness in towns across the nation. You've likely already experienced some of the consequences of policies that are approaching full implementation with little public discourse or voter input. Have you experienced any of the following? Restricted freedom of mobility as you sit for hours in gridlock traffic. Mounting limitations on, or even loss of, your private property. An engineered housing crisis that you're being told must be solved with your money by those who caused it. Loss of parental authority to a government education system that seems to emphasize social indoctrination over education. Transitioning of water resources to regional control by non-elected bureaucrats with subsequent engineered shortages. Heavy influence of international and non-government organizations over local policy at the expense of representative democracy. You're not alone in recognizing these and other symptoms of our diminishing freedoms. The adverse consequences of collectivist policies and laws enacted by local government bodies are affecting almost every citizen in your town. Many have noticed and are ready to act to advance individual liberty, family autonomy, a vibrant ecology, and a strong economy. They're doing this by turning their individual initiative into local action for national impact. To find out how you can join others to advance freedom, please log on to freedom21santacruz.net or call 831-684-2232. That's freedom21santacruz.net or call 831-684-2232. After spearheading efforts to implement the United Nations Sustainable Development Agenda in Santa Cruz, California, Congressman Sam Farr wrote,
I am writing to congratulate you, the Advisory Board, and the Action Santa Cruz County Coalition for completing the local Agenda 21 Action Plan.
Congressman Sam Farr then wrote,
The local Agenda 21 action plan not only has local significance, it also will have regional and national impacts. As you know, the President's Council on Sustainable Development is beginning Phase 3 of its work, with an emphasis on sustainable communities.
Sam Farr continued.
I have been spearheading a similar effort to develop a process of sustainable development planning for the entire region.
So why does Sam Farr now say he's never heard of United Nations Agenda 21?
Yes, Congressman Farr, I'd like your comments. I am Daniel Beckett. I'd like your comments on the United Nations Agenda 21 program that you're implementing here. Could you...
Good evening and Merry Christmas, and welcome to the Freedom 21 radio program broadcast from Santa Cruz, California. I'm Roy Avila, and I'll be with you for the next hour. We have an extraordinary guest this evening, and we're glad that he's been able to take time, because, you know, he's a very busy guy fighting out there for our freedoms on our behalf. We're going to talk about it's time to elect a new Congress. I know we just had an election not too long ago, but we have to keep working at these things. And let's bring to the microphone the founder of the American Policy Center, Tom DeWeese. Good evening, Tom. How are you?
I'm well, Roy, and it's good to talk to you again.
Looks like you're pretty busy.
We have been very busy. Most recently, ending up last week, this fight with the lame duck Congress. They passed so many bills in that session, bills that we have worked for the last 2 years to stop, bills that we were successful in stopping in the regular Congress. They went home and left the controversial things on the table. They went to the people and asked them for their jobs back. And as soon as they had their jobs secured, then they come back into Washington, start a lame duck session, and pass all those controversial things that they didn't have the guts to pass and face the voters with prior to the election. And that's, I'll tell you what, I have never been more upset, more disappointed, or more outraged by what Congress has done and what they did in about a week's time, just a couple weeks ago.
And we'll get to more of that in just a second, but for people who might be new to the program, tell us a bit about the American Policy Center.
Well, we've been around since about 1986, and our primary goals are limited government, free enterprise, private property, individual liberty. And the issues that we work on to promote those ideas, we work on national sovereignty issues, which puts us smack up against the UN and a lot of its policies. We work on education issues, which put us against the Federal Department of Education, the National Education Association. And we work on property rights issues, which many times put us up against radical environmentalists and the sustainable development issue. We've been one of the leaders in exposing that program. And we work on privacy rights, and that puts us right smack up against the National ID and the Patriot Act and this sort of thing.
Was there a single event or a single issue that got you started in this?
I have been an activist since I graduated from high school. I graduated in 67. I started my first real political action activity in 1968, and I've just been doing it ever since. I have always been very concerned about the government and its size and its intrusion into our lives, and programs I've worked on have always been involved in that. From the very first thing I worked on had to do with a state income tax in my home state of Ohio, trying to repeal it. And I've just worked on so many things. I went through the 60s and all the radical things that happened there, and the people marching in the streets and trying to transform our country. And I have a vision of America, of a controlled government, and individuals free to do what they want to do with their lives, what they want to do with their money, what they want to do with their families. And I'm opposed to the federal government trying to tell them how they should live, and that's been my motivation for 35 years.
You know, you have been at this for those 35 years. Do you think the rock is starting to move at all in the right direction?
No, not at all. I think it's moving as rapidly as it can go in the opposite direction. We now have a couple of generations of children who've gone through a public education system where they're not taught the traditional American values of limited government and private enterprise and individual freedom. And a lot of them just don't even know that we have these liberties, that there is a constitution that guarantees them, and they don't know to fight for them. Now we've got a lot of these same people who are in public office who are not aware of these things, and have just been taught from day one that government has the power to grant us those rights, and that's what they should be doing in office. And then so the debate becomes, which rights should we grant and which ones should we take away? And that is a pretty sad state of affairs for a nation that was started with such great hope.
Well, let's get back to this lame Congress update. Talk about some of the things that have been going on.
Well, there were several bills that we had been working on in all aspects of the issues that I laid out a few minutes ago. One of them was a bill called the New Civics Academies. This had to do with teach a federal mandated civics course to be put into the public schools. This bill was so controversial that we were actually getting congressmen to take their names off of it. Originally, it sounded kind of innocent, and it was supposed to talk about the Bill of Rights and so forth. I've got a textbook that was created for this program that is supposed to talk about the Bill of Rights. What it does is compare the U.S. Bill of Rights with the UN's Human Rights Declaration, which is pure socialism. And they don't even, in this textbook on the Bill of Rights, it never mentions all 10 of the Bill of Rights. It mentions two or three of them. It never mentions the Second Amendment. It never mentions the 10th Amendment, which is the amendment that gives the states all the power. It's not talked about in the Constitution for the federal government. It talks about the First Amendment. It glosses over these things. But what it talks about is that there's a difference between the United States system of government and social democracies around the world. Social democracies, we're told in this textbook, have positive rights, where American government has negative rights. And the reason they say that is because our Constitution says the government shall not. And those guarantees that we try to defend to keep the government small and out of our lives, they call that a negative right because it says the government shall not. In the social democracies of Europe and around the world, government it grants the rights of the people. And so they call that positive rights. And so this is what this textbook does. It teaches globalism. It teaches our children to be, talks about them being global citizens. And so this bill was extremely controversial, and we were able to hold it up. And at the last minute in this lame duck session, they changed it. They took out some of the specific language, but they left the holes in there for the bureaucrats to fill in to do exactly what the original bill said it would do, and then they put it up as a non-controversial bill and passed it on a voice vote.
Wow.
That was one of the just dirty politics that took place. They couldn't pass it during the regular session. They wouldn't bring it up for a vote before the election so that people would know where their congressman stood before it was done, and then after the election's done, they go ahead and do it in the dark of night in a lame duck session. So that's one of them.
Well, before you go on, you know, there might be a parent out there listening and says, okay, yeah, when am I going to see that? When is my kid going to be affected? Is that a real thing that's going to happen in my school?
Mm-hmm. Well, again, the textbook has already been written. What it does is it creates academies to take teachers in to teach them the curriculum and how to teach this curriculum. So your civics teachers are now going to be attending these academies within this next year. Some of them already have. They've already had some of them. And they're bringing that curriculum into the classrooms just as soon as they get out of those classes and the textbooks are presented. So it's done, and it's signed into law. It's going to be funded, and every public school, government school, from that will have that. And what we're finding is a lot of these programs are working their way down into private schools, charter schools particularly, but even some private Christian schools end up with some of this curriculum in one part because some of them take federal money. Anybody who takes federal money will end up having to have this this curriculum.
When my kid brings that book home, what are some of the kinds of things that I would see in it, verbiage-wise, that really hits to what you're talking about?
Just watch for the comparisons with what I was talking about, the negative rights and positive rights, is in the book. I don't have it here with me, unfortunately, tonight, but that is verbatim in there, that they talk about these negative rights and positive rights. The comparisons to the UN Human Rights Declaration, which is literally a document that says government will grant you certain rights. And we have to understand that in this country, the founding fathers created a government that said you have guaranteed inalienable rights. You're born with those rights. It's not something that the government says, oh, you ought to have these. It says you have those rights, and government's job is to protect them. And this textbook takes the exact opposite position and glorifies the Declaration of Human Rights from the UN, and it says in there that the Declaration of Independence was really just a radical document to send to the king to just say, here's what we're protesting. The fact of the matter is, the Declaration of Independence, and if you read the Federalist Papers and you read the writings of the Founding Fathers, they say that the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution go hand in hand. You cannot have one without the other, because the Declaration of Independence states our principles, and the Constitution says, here's how we're going to enact that. And the two go hand in hand. This textbook and major moves in the curriculum in public schools today is to discount the Declaration of Independence and to ignore much of what's in the Constitution, and pretty much to deride it. And that's what this textbook does.
Okay, well, we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll talk more with the founder of the American Policy Center, Tom DeWeese. You're listening to the Freedom 21 radio program from Santa Cruz, California.
The views expressed on...
Are your public officials or the people on their staff talking about sustainable development plans for your town or neighborhood? Are you sure they know what they're talking about? Public officials have heard good things about Smart Growth, the Wildlands Project, and sustainable development in general, but few really understand what they are. Now, thanks to the efforts of Freedom 21 Santa Cruz, there is an easy way to teach your public officials about sustainable development. We have developed a document entitled Understanding Sustainable Development Agenda 21, a guide for public officials. Simply download the guide for public officials from our website at freedom21santacruz.net and give it to your representatives to help them learn more about sustainable development. When you go to freedom21santacruz.net, it's on the right-hand side under free downloads. That website, once again, is freedom21santacruz.net. If you would like book copies, please call us for special pricing. The phone number is 831-684-2232. At the dawn of the 21st century, America is at a crossroads. The path we choose will have far-reaching effects on our lives and on the lives of the generations to come. America's choice is simple: liberty or sustainable development. Freedom 21 Santa Cruz, in conjunction with the American Policy Center, has developed a way for you to learn more about sustainable development. America's Choice, Liberty or Sustainable Development is the title of this info-packed set of three DVDs. During over 6 hours of intriguing presentations, you will hear from America's foremost experts on sustainable development. You will hear Michael Shaw speak on liberty, a life of one's own. You will hear from Dr. Michael Kaufman as he lays out the fraud of smart growth. You will hear from Michael Chapman, who documents transformational education and how it is preparing our children for global citizenship. You will hear from Beverly Ekman, as she exposes the group manipulation tactics used by sustainable developers. And you will learn from Tom DeWeese about how sustainable development is bringing about a wrenching transformation of America. Get this special package today for only $49. Pick up the phone and call us to place your order. The number is 831-684-2232. Or visit our safe and secure website at freedom21santacruz.net to place your online order now. Choose wisely over America's choice, liberty, or sustainable development today. That website, once again, is freedom21santacruz.net or call 831-684-2232.
As a listener of tonight's Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show, you have exclusive access to our online audience participation center at freedom21santacruz.net/radio. Here are just some of the value-added features you'll get by logging on while you're tuned in. Get free access to the research and articles that have contributed to tonight's show. See an important multimedia presentation titled The Philosophy of Liberty. Email the host with your comments. Get special discounts on featured books like the ever-popular Pocket Constitution. Register to receive a free subscription to AdvanceBulletin.net, which provides commentary and analysis on a spectrum between liberty and tyranny. So get more. Log on while you're tuned in and advance freedom at freedom21santacruz.net/radio.
Welcome back to the Freedom 21 radio program. We have our great guest this evening, Tom DeWeese, the founder of the American Policy Center. We're doing a lame duck Congress update, and these are really dangerous things that are going on. Tom, talk a bit about the national ID.
Well, the national ID is something we've been fighting for a number of years. Let me just give you a little bit of history here. Back in 1996, three different bills, the Immigration Reform Act of that year, the Welfare Reform Act of that year, and the Medical Reform Act of that year, each carried exactly the same language in them, a section in them, that created a national ID. This was done in all three of those bills. One is a way to curb illegal immigration, one as a way to get find deadbeat dads, and one is a way to, you've heard a lot of talk about having medical records available, in a database,
right,
for people. There's a lot of discussion going on about it. All three of those bills carried that language. But what it did was the language said that the DMVs in the country would, or the states would, create universal driver's licenses using the Social Security number as a central identifier, and possibly would be thumbprints and retinal scans and all this kind of stuff. Anyway, this language put in there. Not one member of Congress knew it was there. It was put in there at the last minute by some congressional staffers, and they didn't know it was there. And it was there for a number of years, ready to go into enactment in, I believe it was 1999. And that's when it was discovered it was there. And we were able to get that language repealed. Senator Shelby from Alabama quietly put in some legislation and got it repealed. It was done repealed the same way it was passed, kind of stealthily. So that was done actually in 2000. So we thought we had won a major victory, but what had happened was all of the paperwork, all the materials, all the DMV people had been trained in this. Everything was ready to go into place, and we got it stopped. So here you have a massive bureaucracy ready to go into place, got nowhere to go. And they sat there fussing around trying to figure out what to do with it, and along comes 9/11. And immediately, I watched this happen because I knew the language, I knew what was there. Immediately, the national ID comes up. Now along comes the 9/11 Commission, which is nothing but a bunch of former government executives and bureaucrats who are now putting a form together to tell current government bureaucrats and executives what they should do to create more government. That's all the 9/11 Commission was. It had nothing to do with anything effective in taking care of the threat of terrorism. And in there, lo and behold, is the exact same language about creating a national ID card. And interestingly enough, in the debate on the lame duck session, you heard a lot about the intelligence bill, revamping the intelligence community, and you even heard some language about it didn't have strong enough immigration rules and so forth in it. That's all you ever heard about the debate over this thing. But deep down inside of it was the national ID, and that's what they passed. And they did it without ever talking about it, without ever debating it, ever saying it was a good idea. The majority of Americans have consistently told Congress they oppose having a national database that can lock onto us, tell where we are, follow our every move, control our lives through a national ID. They've told the Congress they don't want it, and they ignored it. They quietly did it without ever having the guts to tell the American people that's what they were doing. And now President Bush has signed it into law, and that's what's going to be developed now. The states are being told how they have to create driver's licenses. And you know, there ain't nothing in the Constitution that says the federal government has that power. The Constitution says 50 states are sovereign, and they have a right to issue driving permits and so forth the way they want to, what they want to have on there, and there's nothing that says the federal government has the power to do that, but they have done it anyway, and that's what's now in place.
Is there anything we can do about that?
Yes, we can. We can, and I think this is vitally important. We cannot sit back and say, well, it's the law now, there's nothing we can do about it. We need to put heat not only on Congress, that we are absolutely opposed to this, but we need to put the heat on our state legislators because they have capitulated their own power. The states have the power to say no to this, and they're not doing it. And that's where the pressure really needs to be placed, that they cannot and they should not help to implement this thing and capitulate their power to the federal government. We've got to put that heat on there. We can still stop it. We probably can't stop it completely, but we can drastically change it and change how it's done. I mean, first of all, let's take a quick break here, and then we'll go ahead. Talk about that, then we get back.
Okay, you're on the Freedom 21 radio program with Tom DeWeese. We'll be right back.
The adverse consequences of collectivist policies and laws enacted by local government bodies are affecting almost every citizen in your town. Many have noticed and are ready to act to advance individual liberty, family autonomy, a vibrant ecology, and a strong economy. They're doing this by turning their individual initiative into local action for national impact. To find out how you can join others to advance freedom, please log on to freedom21santacruz.net or call 831-684-2232. That's freedom21santacruz.net or call 831-684-2232.
Are your public officials or the people on their staff talking about sustainable development plans for your town or neighborhood? Are you sure they know what they're talking about? Public officials have heard good things about Smart Growth, the Wildlands Project, and sustainable development in general, but few really understand what they are. Now, thanks to the efforts of Freedom 21 Santa Cruz, there is an easy way to teach your public officials about sustainable development. We've developed a document entitled Understanding Sustainable Development Agenda 21, a guide for public officials. Simply download the guide for public officials from our website at freedom21santacruz.net and give it to your representatives to help them learn more about sustainable development. When you go to freedom21santacruz.net, it's on the right-hand side under free downloads. That website, once again, is freedom21santacruz.net. If you would like bulk copies, please call us for special pricing. The phone number is 831-684-2232.
Welcome back. We're talking with Tom DeWeese. the founder of the American Policy Center on the Freedom 21 radio program from Santa Cruz, California. Tom, we were talking about the national ID and what we can do about that.
Yeah. Well, what I want to say is we get so into a mindset about some of these policies, and we kind of really lose sight of what the real issue is here. We're talking about a need to protect our country from terrorists. This is the excuse that they have used to pass this bill and to pass a national ID. And it is a legitimate concern about, we are threatened from the outside, and we need to address that. But, you know, this bill was passed, again, in the dark of night, speedily. Nobody in Congress had read it, just like the Patriot Act. They learned later that there were a whole lot of things in the Patriot Act that should not have been passed. But now they're there, and they can't get it rescinded. And here we go again. Why did this bill have to be passed so quickly? It had to be passed in this lame duck session. Why couldn't it be passed or debated in the next session with a new Congress and discussing it? Because there was an agenda afoot here to get this thing in place without any debate, and that's why they did it the way they did. The legitimate concern here is, how do we prove that we're Americans? And that's the main issue when you're looking at whether you have invaders coming in here. How do we know that they're Americans or they're from a foreign country or here to do us harm? What we need to do is create a way to prove that we are Americans. We can create ID cards in a private sector that does not give the federal government all the information about our private lives, set it all up in private data banks. If we are on a list as being felons or being wanted, just by having our name and specific information there to tell that we're Americans, that'd be enough to get into the government data banks and decide whether we are on a list for being felons or not. We don't need a national system like this. A national identification card, no matter what form it takes, will allow the federal government to inappropriately monitor the movements and transactions of every American. And history has shown that this is how totalitarian governments get control of the people. We do not need something that's watching every one of our money transactions. We do not need something that is following us along the way to where we travel and so forth. We need to be able to prove we're Americans. What's really interesting about the security bill that was passed and contained this language is that it did not have anything in there about illegal immigration. And the number one thing we need to do to protect our borders and protect us from terrorists is shut down the border so they can't walk in this country without any kind of passport or anything. And this is the one thing they didn't do. What they did do was take the American people and lock them up in a national ID card. Why? Because the goal was not stopping terrorism. The goal was to have the American people watched from every direction. And that's what this card will do.
And you said something earlier on that really struck me, but it is our responsibility to do something about it. We just can't sit and say, oh, well, it's law. That's just how it is.
Yeah, you must. The American people must get out of this sleep, this slumber they're in. I'll tell you what, I am appalled. And I don't care who I make mad saying this. I am appalled every time I hear a newscast or people interviewed in airports with the next outrage from the government, patting us down, strip searching us, taking little old ladies, terrorizing in the airport, all these kind of things. I am appalled by people who stand there and say, well, I feel a lot safer now because they're doing all that. What I really want to do is trip them the next time I hear them say that, and then I can show them that they're not safe walking either. There is no safety and security. You make it yourself, you defend yourself, and you don't allow the federal government to rip off all of your liberties just so that you can maybe feel a little bit safer today. It's a false security, and you don't deserve it.
You know, we're saying that what kind of heat do politicians feel?
What kind of heat do they feel?
When we want to put the heat on them about changing these kinds of things, what makes them feel it the most?
What they're feeling is heat from lobbyists with massive amounts of money. That's what they're feeling. And they're not feeling the heat from the people because the people aren't getting on the phone and calling them. They do respond to that, and I have said this over and over and over again. People always say, what's my little phone call matter?
Right.
It does matter, but we aren't doing that. And we just resign ourselves to say, oh, well, it's happening, so what? The reason all these bills that I'm talking about tonight, all of them were up in front of Congress during the regular session, and we were pouring phone calls and pressure in, and we were keeping them from passing these things. And they deliberately did this in the heat of, in the dark of night, so we wouldn't know it was happening. All happens in a matter of a 24 or 48 hour period, so they would have the heat off of them. But it's not over. We should put the pressure on them now. And what we, I'll tell you, this is something that I wanted to talk about specifically, about what to do here, because we do feel helpless in this
right.
massive power of the federal government. But we have got to stop re-electing these people.
Amen.
I don't care if they did a little bit good over here, a little bit over there. These people came together in Congress, they lied to you, they ignored you, and they passed these bills. There is only a handful of congressmen that are worth having in there. Ron Paul is number one. He deliberately stands in the way of these things, does his very best to stop these things, and others ignore him. Let me tell you what happens to Ron Paul in Congress. He has been isolated by the leadership. When Ron Paul wants something done, he had a bill that he was bringing up for a floor debate a couple of years ago, and they said the debate will be at 11 o'clock. And at 11 o'clock, Ron Paul walked in with all of his people ready to fight on the floor of the House. You know what? They had to debate at 10 o'clock.
Oh,
they
wow.
changed the calendar. This is what they do to Ron Paul. He was going to come in and do his best to stop the new civics thing. They had it up for just a unanimous consent. And that meant that if nobody said anything against it, then it would pass without any kind of vote at all. Ron Paul was prepared to go on the floor of the House and vote against it to stop it. It wasn't the new civics bill, it was another bill, but it was stopped before he got down there to do it. But what he had to do was go on the floor in a stealthful way and not let them know he was there to vote against that bill. Otherwise, they wouldn't have brought it up for a vote. The evil that the leadership in Congress performs when they want something done is beyond belief. And again, I say what we need to do is stop reelecting them, period. We should do our best to create an entirely new Congress where there isn't an incumbent in it, and then we would begin to have some changes. They would begin to listen to us. But they are in there. They make it so it's difficult to get them out of office. And I think only six members of Congress were not reelected this time. That is incredible. And then they go and do this filthy, dirty stuff that they did in the lame duck Congress, and they just laugh at you.
Well, yeah, I was looking at another thing you wrote about, mandatory drugging of children.
Yes. It's called, believe it or not, it's called the Freedom Act. And I love this. We have the Patriot Act that takes all of our liberty away. We have the Freedom Act that is talking about mandatory mental health examinations of all the children in schools. And they got it passed. At first they didn't, and then at the last minute it went through. This was another bill that they could not get passed during the regular session of Congress, and then they run this thing through. And President Bush is the man who wanted this done, and all it is a gift to the pharmaceutical industry in this country that is pouring Ritalin and other kinds of drugs like that into our children. They're poisoning our children with this stuff, and now they have capitulated. The lobbying arms of the pharmaceutical companies have won a major battle. And what is this? Is it take every single child in schools and have them tested for mental health? What kind of country does that?
Wow. We have a caller on the line, Roger from Nevada. Roger, go ahead.
Yes. How are you doing there, Tom?
Good.
Yes. I'd like to know, is your organization watching over Congress with George Bush? He said he's going to make the tax code simpler, and here he's lying to the general public again. They're not even going to touch it. And I think if we hit the congressmen right where the pocketbooks are at, where Americans keep on funding through taxes, all this stuff, if we cut them down to size, they won't be able to fund all these liberal programs.
Well, the question is, how do you cut them down to size? You know, the flim-flams that go on about tax cuts is the most creative work Congress does all year. The words they use to talk about tax cuts are beyond belief. We haven't had a tax cut. They just raise it somewhere else. They lower this one over here, so you are suckered into voting for them because they gave me a tax cut. And then over here, they raise the revenue someplace else. Then pretty soon they take that tax cut away from you, too. This government, we are now up to $7 trillion in spending. It's gone up $2 trillion in the last 2 years. We're watching it, and I'm going to tell you, George W. Bush is not getting a free ride from the American Policy Center in the next 4 years. I am outraged by the things he's done with illegal immigration and signing this national ID into place and so forth. These are flim-flams, and the American people had better figure it out real quick. And one of the things I heard all through the election, when I did interviews like this on various stations, a lot of Christian people calling in saying, George Bush is a Christian, so I've got to vote for him. I say bull. He is not. And he's no more. Jimmy Carter was a Christian, too. He taught Sunday school, but I didn't hear anybody saying I got to vote for him because of that. Has nothing whatsoever to do with the policies that he's putting in place. And this president, George W. Bush, has raised the size of our government beyond anything Bill Clinton could ever have dreamed of. And he's put these things in place, and the Republicans are helping him do it. And I find that to be an absolute outrage. And I'm sorry if I'm going off on this, but I am outraged by what has happened in the last few months.
Oh, no, that's quite right. Thanks for your call, Roger. You know, I wanted to get back to this mandatory drugging of children because... wouldn't the next logical step would be to mentally screen parents? And
yep. You know, Hillary Clinton proposed that parents have licenses. They'd be licensed by the government in order to have children.
Wow.
This is exactly where all of this is leading, that only the government knows how to raise those children. And we have mental health screening for parents to see if they are suitable to be parents. Isn't that the first step to licensing them? And, I mean... Who owns the children? Are they yours or are they the government's? Now, the last time I said that, somebody said children aren't owned by anybody. They're individuals on their own. Okay, yeah, let's get into semantics. Are the parents in charge or is the government in charge? And with the government doing screening of their mental health, for crying out loud, go back to, people hate it when you make comparisons to the Soviet Union, but that was the greatest example of a totalitarian government and what absolute power would do. And people who did not love the Soviet Union were put in mental hospitals. They had to be crazy if they didn't love it. And that's exactly where we're headed here. So.
Well, that is scary. That is really scary. And
you need a Valium.
Not only are they want to do that, but they want to take all the land and run that too.
Yes. Right back to sustainable development. One of the big issues that we fought for the last 3 years, and we won, believe it or not,
hallelujah, for
were the heritage areas.
Talk a bit about that.
I'm sorry?
Define the heritage area.
Nobody can define heritage areas. Ah. We've testified before Congress in the Senate 3 times, the American Policy Center has, and they keep expressing these things as being just a way to honor something that happened there. We have in West Virginia the coal mining heritage area. I live in the middle of the Mosby heritage area, supposedly honoring the Gray Ghost, Colonel Mosby from the Civil War. This whole area was his area. And they just keep denying that there's anything wrong with that. It's just to honor it. The fact of the matter is, it is massive amounts of federal money running through the National Park Service. And what they're really doing is everything in that heritage area has the potential to be run like a national park. And this affects building and zoning codes. It shuts out of the process the local citizens. It shuts out the property owners in the process, and it gives major grants to green organizations to come in and then begin to dictate how things are done. This is just another part of how sustainable development is put into place. We talk about smart growth. We talk about heritage areas. We talk about historic preservation. We talk about all these different things. What it really boils down to is the federal government dictating how land is used. And, there are thousands and thousands of acres in these heritage areas that are private property. And the entire state of Tennessee, by the way, is a heritage area.
Wow.
Half the state of Iowa is a heritage area. And what's been happening is that these have been put into place one by one. You'll get a congressman who is lobbied by green organizations to create a heritage area, and he's sold on the idea that it's just to honor what goes on there. And interestingly enough, to honor what goes on there, take West Virginia, for example, with the coal heritage area. Just to honor what happened there. You're honoring the mining of coal. Now go into that heritage area and try to mine coal. You can't do it. What they're honoring, what they're trying to do is put America in a museum. You go into Iowa with the Silos and Smokestack heritage area and try to run a business that has smokestacks or try to run a farm in the heritage area. You can't do it. They're locking it away, taking away the productive use of the land. They continue to demand people who have property there to pay taxes on it, but they can't use it for anything. So this is what the heritage areas are. Well, what they did in the lame duck Congress, we've been fighting these things and stopping them, keeping them controversial, and they haven't been able to move. So they took all of them and threw them into a bill at the last minute in the lame duck session. The bill was S-1521. And if you look it up, S-1521 was a bill to name a post office. That's all it was. But they threw 15 heritage areas into it. So when we started putting out an alert saying, fight this bill, people would look it up, people in Congress would look it up, and they'd say, well, that's the name of a post office. What's your problem? Well, it's got 15 heritage areas in it. We were able to stop it. It did not get passed. So that was a victory that we had. The reason we fought these so hard is because the next step is a national heritage area bill that creates a national process to do this instead of just one congressman after another promoting them on their own. We would have one big national heritage area bill, and that's what we want to stop at all costs. It's like the Endangered Species Act. So, we've won this battle so far, and we're very happy about that.
What always fascinates me about the way that these things are proposed is, they take out TV ads or do whatever. They look really beautiful, and it's for all a great cause. And they're sold really very slick.
Yep. Here's a very telling thing about the heritage areas. My legislative director, Peyton Knight, he is the national expert on heritage areas. He knows more about these things than anybody in this country. And he ended up in a meeting, a facilitated meeting in the Senate, with a bunch of people from the Park Service and some green organizations and so forth, talking about heritage areas. And they tried to go around the room and get consensus and get him to agree to certain things. Well, that'd be progress. Peyton kept saying, you've got to have a provision in this that notifies the landowners before it happens. That sounds pretty logical, doesn't it? You're going to have your land put in a heritage area. You ought to be told by the government that's going to happen, shouldn't you? That was the one, number one sticking point they refused to allow to have happen. They said, we don't have the means to do that. Why, you don't have a phone book? This is the kind of thing they will not notify people. Why? Because they know the people won't like it. So this is the way they run these things.
We have another caller. We have Ed from Michigan. Ed, go ahead.
Oh, hello. Pardon me. I would agree that Comrade Bush's new intelligence bill is clandestine. I asked the question, too, what's the hurry?
Mm-hmm.
What was the big hurry to rush this thing through? Now, forget about appealing to the Senate or the House. These people are all compromised. Needless to say, my question would be, why can we appeal to the federal courts like they strike other bills down when they feel they want to? So would possibly we could appeal to the federal judge or federal courts?
Thanks, Ed.
Thank you.
And to your point about what's the hurry, they made it sound like we didn't have an intelligence agency in place while all this was going on, that we had to have this because we didn't have any intelligence. That isn't true. They have the intelligence agencies in place. They just wanted to revamp it. That's all. But anyway, yes, you can appeal to the federal courts, and many times we win there if you do it in the right way. And there are some, when you're going, for example, some of these land grab deals and so forth, there are right ways and wrong ways to do it. If you do it on the issue of privacy protection or property rights protection, you probably will lose. If you do it on the basis of the Constitution doesn't allow for this action to take place through this action, you probably got a pretty good chance of winning it. Too many people argue it in the wrong way. We also have an awful lot of bad judges who will throw you out. But we, for the most part, when we've gotten into the courts and when we've been able to argue it in the right way, we have won. Wayne Hage is a major example of that. He's winning some major efforts against the Park Service and the Forest Service and so forth. That is one way. The other way really is to begin to put pressure on local governments. I can't emphasize this enough. When you're talking about sustainable development and these land grabs and so forth, your local county commissioners, your local city councilmen, these guys, how this moves forward is the federal government puts grant money together. And then they say, you voluntarily put these programs together, you can have this grant money. But the people who really have written that legislation and are promoting it are the Nature Conservancy and the Audubon Society and the Sierra Club, who know about that grant money, and they begin to put pressure on your local elected officials to take that money. And if they refuse to take it, then they start saying to the people of the community, well, look, these guys haven't taken this money. It's your money. They're cheating you out of it. This is the Trojan horse of how they are putting this stuff into place. What you have to do is begin to elect county commissioners and city councilmen who understand what the game is, have education about what these policies are, and know how to fight back and resist that Trojan horse. Then you can begin to see some things turned around.
What are some of the ways that we can get the information and be able to test the people who are running for office before we elect them?
Well, Freedom 21 Santa Cruz and their document on for elected officials on sustainable development is a major tool. The tool that we've put together on the DVD on liberty or sustainable development we created this as a tool for people to use to understand a very complicated issue and how it all fits together, and not only land use issues and smart growth, but education and so forth and how it's all done. That DVD has more information in it than any place else you'll find it, and it's designed for you to listen to and understand this and then get it to your local officials. You've got to get that kind of information so you know you're dealing with this. All these things we're talking about, whether it's the national ID or the heritage areas or any of the other things we talked about today, the language written for these things are deliberately written so they don't sound threatening to you, but they are threatening, and you've got to do what you can to stop that. And getting involved on the local level, I think it's a waste, really, to deal too much with Congress at this point, other than if you make the phone calls to congressional offices, they will hear it, they will feel the heat from it if there's enough of it, and they will hesitate to act. They'll try to find some other stealth way to do it, which is what they did with the lame duck session. And now what we have to do is hang out the dirty laundry and say, these are the guys who passed these bills and are responsible for it, and we need to now start a movement to get them out of office and make them feel the heat at home. You just can't sit there and say, well, Democrats are bad, Republicans are good, or vice versa. It is universal. There is not a dime's worth of difference between the Democrats and Republicans. I'm sorry if that upsets a few Republicans listening, but that's the facts. And watch how they've done it. We've got more government now under the Republican Congress than we ever dreamed of with anybody else, with any Democrats.
Well, I really appreciate your work and appreciate the... I know it's late over where you are. Taking the time to inform us. Keep up the good fight, and if you can, have a Merry Christmas.
We'll do it, Roy. Thank you so much.
All right, thank you. Stay tuned next on Freedom 21 Santa Cruz. We've got a great show on sustainable development with Bev Ekman.
The views expressed on tonight's Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show are the opinions of neither this station nor its sponsors. In fact, they're not necessarily the opinions of Radio Liberty or of Freedom 21 Santa Cruz. The views expressed by the host are those of the host. Also, the opinions expressed by callers and guests are theirs. Whether you agree or disagree, please join in. To participate, you can call during caller segments at 888-24-LIBERTY. That's 888-245-4237. Or you can go to our online audience participation center at www.freedom21santacruz.net/radio. That's freedom21santacruz.net/radio. Now let's start advancing freedom.
Good evening and welcome to the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio program. My name is Roy Avila and I will be your host moderator for this evening. And we have a special treat. Tonight we have Michael Shaw on the other side of the microphone instead of doing the interviewing. He'll be interviewed today, so I always have fun with him doing that. Good evening, Michael. How are you?
Well, good evening to you, Roy. How are you?
I am good. Always interested to hear what you have to say, because I've known you for a while, and you are one of the frontline people on this whole anti-sustainable development information thing.
Well, we really think of ourselves as being pro and defensive of liberty. And liberty is facing a huge threat, probably the largest threat America has ever faced. And it is sustainable development. So we're definitely spreading the word, getting the information out about what sustainable development is. And it's been a wonderful year. We figured tonight is the completion of our first year. And those of us who've been in this room have learned a lot from our guests and the various hosts that have been on here, and our regular listening audience has come along. The understanding about sustainable development now is much deeper than it was a year ago, and that word is methodically spreading its way around the country. And we've certainly seen, from east to west and north to south, we've seen so many inputs on how it's affecting their community, and seeing the same patterns of this creeping takeover of the American experience.
So for someone who might just be flipping across or, you know, happen upon us, let's talk about what is sustainable development.
Well, most people would say that it's about the environment, and of course that's the front cover they put on sustainable development, but it's really the application of political theory, and it's as simple as saying it's about centralized control over human action. But it gets there in a very clever, insidious manner, and that's what you have to dig into to understand, and then bring that information out and summarize it in a way where people can recognize that in fact that is what's happening in their community and what they're seeing happen in their state and all through the country for that matter.
How did it evolve?
Well, I think it evolved. It's as old as time. It is a political theory about centralizing control into the hands of the most powerful. This particular version of it evolved or was launched on the world in 92 at the Earth Summit in Rio de Janeiro, but it can easily be traced back earlier than that, because what's really being done with sustainable development is that we're working ourselves toward what I call a fiat global capitalism. When I see fiat, you might think of it as a crony or insider capitalism, as opposed to free enterprise. And really, those two forms of business are natural opposites or enemies of each other. Global capitalism, in the fiat sense, really seeks to eliminate free enterprise or laissez-faire, a person who is conducting business for the benefit of the customer.
Okay, well, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll pick up on that right after this.
You might be wondering if Freedom 21 Santa Cruz is a liberal or a conservative organization. Are they left or right, Republican or Democrat? But you'll find that none of these one-dimensional labels applies to Freedom 21 Santa Cruz, nor to many of its participants. Freedom 21 Santa Cruz dialogue doesn't take place in a left-right, liberal-conservative dialectic, but on a spectrum between liberty and tyranny. Freedom 21 Santa Cruz participants include people from all political parties, religions, races, and backgrounds who are united in the pursuit of individual liberty and the protection of our U.S. Constitutional Republic.
To find out how you can donate to or participate in Freedom 21 Santa Cruz, please log on to freedom21santacruz.net or call 831-684-2232.
Policies, procedures, and laws enacted by local government and non-government organizations in the name of diversity, community, and Earth are diminishing individual liberty, degrading ecology, and threatening human life and happiness in towns across the nation. You've likely already experienced some of the consequences of policies that are approaching full implementation, with little public discourse or voter input. Have you experienced any of the following? Restricted freedom of mobility as you sit for hours in gridlock traffic. Mounting limitations on, or even loss of, your private property. An engineered housing crisis that you're being told must be solved with your money by those who caused it. Loss of parental authority to a government education system that seems to emphasize social indoctrination over education. transitioning of water resources to regional control by non-elected bureaucrats with subsequent engineered shortages, heavy influence of international and non-government organizations over local policy, at the expense of representative democracy. You're not alone in recognizing these and other symptoms of our diminishing freedoms. The adverse consequences of collectivist policies and laws enacted by local government bodies are affecting almost every citizen in your town. Many have noticed and are ready to act to advance individual liberty, family autonomy, a vibrant ecology, and a strong economy. They're doing this by turning their individual initiative into local action for national impact. To find out how you can join others to advance freedom, please log on to freedom21santacruz.net or call 831-684-2232. That's freedom21santacruz.net or call 831-684-2232.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz program. And this evening we're talking with Michael Shaw about sustainable development. You were talking about, you said a couple of things in your last comments, political and business. So is this sustainable development thing, you also talked about the environment, an environmental movement, a political movement, a business movement?
Yes. The environmental movement covers the combination of the two. When you put business and politics or government together, you end up with tyranny. I mean, that's just the nature of it. You can call it socialism or you can call it fascism. It's either one of those forms of economics are combining the power of business with the force of government. So you end up with a society that operates on the basis of insiders and not on the basis of initiative or productivity or potential. And it really ends up, in order to be able to enforce a system of corporate socialism, the combination of business with government, you end up needing a police state to keep it in place. And of course, it's that corporate socialism that combines with a police state, always dressed as an environmental movement, that causes all of our action ultimately to be controlled. And what the thinkers behind this, the political philosophers behind it, think is that by creating a society of this nature, human nature itself can be changed, and we can end up with a classless society where people just do what they're supposed to do. Of course, there's always an elite in the background making sure we do, but that's the political goal of those who are most deeply behind sustainable development, is to get our society completely controlled so that the nature of man can be reworked into an agent for the common good as defined by the then ruling elite.
How did you get involved in this? When did it hit you over the head?
Well,
or was it a slower type of thing?
I think there was a point when it sort of just hit me. When I realized in 2001 that as councils were popping up all over Santa Cruz, and I remembered back to my Agenda 21 meetings that I had attended in the 90s here in Santa Cruz.
So you were somewhat involved in it.
Well, I saw it happening, but it was so crazy, I just wrote it off. It was suggested that I attend these meetings to know what was going on, and I came back and I said, this is craziness. We don't need to worry about this. These are people who are talking about not having Earth violated in any way and putting people into intense living centers and taking the natural resources of America and making them off limits, and really it was about eliminating America's middle class. I said, well, nobody would take this seriously, but in 2001 I found out that our local board of supervisors had quietly adopted the Agenda 21 ideas as sort of a soft law guide, and that was in 97. I found out about that in 2001 at the same time that I was attending these council meetings that were calling for stakeholder consensus goals, and we're always ending up with business and government somehow combining, and the citizen being hurt.
Now, when you were going to these meetings, what kind of sense did you get of what was going on?
Well, the sense was that if you didn't go along, you weren't wanted. And if you raised questions like, well, what about the private property implications of taking that kind of control over that person's land who's not even here? Well, that wasn't, those comments weren't appreciated. I continued to make them, and some of these councils actually ended and just went away. But they're all over town then, they're all over town now, and of course, as we got deeper and deeper into this with a number of people here in Santa Cruz, we began to find out that it was happening everywhere, and it was always the federal government with some grant money and some scheme, usually combined with a local foundation, here it's the Packard Foundation, who makes the money go, that gets the people motivated to attend these council meetings and come up with these predetermined outcomes that then get implemented by compliant government elected officials.
And so what happens to the people we elect and, you know, our courts? What use are they then?
Well, they're both of use, certainly. We're on the wrong course in a number of regards, but there are a number of court decisions and of late some jury decisions. We've had some great interviews on this show recently of parties or lawyers who have represented victimized landowners who have gotten tremendous jury verdicts. So the courts, and the courts at the Supreme Court level are making some advance also, even some of the appellate courts. So this year, the Supreme Court will presumably decide that the common good, when determined by a private developer and the city, cannot take your house for somebody else's private development. Now, that case is before the Supreme Court, and if the citizens lose that case, then the whole premise of life, liberty, and property, I'd say, would be effectively undermined. I'm very confident that the Kelo case coming out of Connecticut will rule in the favor of the ordinary American and say that a man's castle is his home, and they will recognize what our founders knew, which was that without property, there is no liberty. And
expand on that.
Well, if we think about what private property is, it's really the relationship that a person has with a thing. It's not the thing itself, it's your ability to use the thing in the way that is reasonable and beneficial to you. But if that thing is taken away from you, the connection, the relationship you have, whether it's expression or being who you are, is taken away. If they can take your property, they certainly can prohibit your association, direct your work assignment, etc. Because if the product of your labor or that you've traded for is taken away or its use is denied, it changes your motivation for what it is you might do and how you interact with people and how you act yourself.
And I've also heard you talk about sometimes they don't just take the land, but they don't let you do anything, so it's just as bad.
Well, that's certainly the case. The second hour tonight, we're going to talk to Dave Honeycutt in Oregon, because there the situation has gotten so bad with regulations that prohibit the use of Oregonians' land that they actually came together and passed an initiative with over 60% of the vote to negate all regulations on rural lands that took value away from the landowner. And that came from a state that usually is thought of as liberal voters. Of course, liberal voters are every bit as interested in protecting their house, their rights, their liberty, and their life as conservatives are. I mean, this is a battle of Americans against elitists. And the elitists have given us a big fool job with a lot of money carefully planted and a lot of tax viciously extracted so that these infiltrations of the global sustainable idea implemented by the federal agencies comes right into every local community in the United States with silly grants that is designed to further the implementation of this centralized collectivist type control of our lives.
How is sustainable development affecting our everyday life?
Well, in California, it begins with the fact that it's hard to get around on our freeways. Sustainable developments at smart growth programs call for us to get out of our cars and get on either a trail or a train. And that's why here, even in Santa Cruz, They're talking about building a coastal train line that will cost hundreds of millions of dollars, isn't wanted by people except as a tourist trolley, and that's the phony front that they put on this for spending taxpayer money to begin to acquire the rail line. But if our monies were going to the lanes on the freeways that needed to move us around, we wouldn't have the traffic problems we have. So today, it's worsening the infrastructure on purpose to create a crisis so that we shift our behavior. It's all behavior modification planning, so that we shift our behavior and become compliant to the form of life that the sustainable developers have decided is in our own best interest.
So that's in the transportation area. It seems like everything is crisis. You know, we have a housing crisis.
Well, the housing crisis is part of sustainable development. You know, you can break the back of a housing market by restricting the land available, and that's happened not just in Santa Cruz, but across the country, with these urban service boundaries, which forces up the land very high within the boundary and makes it very low outside the boundary because it can't be used. So naturally, the prices in Santa Cruz and the rest of the California and national cities that are constraining the development of the houses that people want, what we have is prices just going crazy. And then, of course, those who solve that problem come in with a proposed solution. And here in Santa Cruz, it's just bizarre. 10,000 government-controlled units to be built along the coastline with commitments, the newspaper says, buried somewhere one day, of $295 million of federal taxpayer money to subsidize the construction of these very expensive subsidized housing units. Now, they're not very expensive because they're going to be very nice. It's just they're costing 2 to 3 times what the market in a laissez-faire free enterprise context would be able to deliver the same product for. But the nonprofits that are building these with government monies given to government tenants at subsidized costs is now the solution to the problem that was generated by the smart growth policies in the first place.
So is the transportation and the housing tied together?
Well, sure it is, because now, for instance, here in the state of California, Governor Schwarzenegger's office with a Secretary of Housing, Transportation, and Jobs, get that, it's the three, Housing, Transportation, and Jobs. We haven't seen the full jobs effect yet. But the Housing and Transportation Secretary is the former director of the Bay Area Council for Sustainable Development, and housing now must be is largely being subsidized along with transportation systems, and the housing is to be centered on these mass transit systems, and included in a lot of the housing comes child care, government provided child care. So what we're doing is we're creating a dependency class by first having divided the population between left and right and between Democrats and Republicans, and then confusing our children about what the nature of liberty is while we go around and mess up the economics of a free society so that we need government to come in and save the day.
Okay, well, we'll take a quick break and continue right after this. We're back. I am a dad, and I have kids, and, you know, when you said we are confusing our kids, that kind of made the hair on the back of my neck stand up, so I want to know, how are kids being confused?
Well, I think we could ask our children about what they're learning in their civics classes in school and see just what they are learning about in connection with the principles of freedom that come out of the Declaration of Independence, which were so important to my grammar school education. And the idea that our rights are unalienable, that is, that they come from our Creator, we're built with them inherently, and that they include life, liberty, and property. Because the founders understood that without the right to the use of property, your own property, there could be no right to liberty. And without the right to property and liberty, without the protection of those rights, your life itself would be in jeopardy. So our children aren't learning that and aren't learning the roots of that. They certainly aren't studying the Constitution and putting an understanding that's in accordance with the meaning of the words that were used at the time they were written. And it's just so clear that the American political culture depends on a consistent application from generation to generation of these principles. Instead, they're learning so much about diversity, tolerance, and multiculturalism, which are the front words for teaching them collectivist sustainable development.
Is team building and all those kinds of things woven into that?
Well, sure. I had a friend of mine say something about team building to me yesterday, and team building is fine so long as we remember that a team is made up of individuals. But here at our local high school, the way they teach team is that there is no I in team. There's a huge difference there, and that's the difference our children are being lost on. That's why there's an increasing alienation in so many families between mom and dad and their teenagers. And boy, teenage years are the most wonderful years to be raising a child, but not if the child has already become part of the new age, new system of social thought that is being indoctrinated into them in our government schools and in many private schools, for that matter, as well.
See, and time is flying, and I've been so interested in talking with you. I forget to ask anybody who's listening. If you have a question you want to talk to Michael, you can call us at 888-24-LIBERTY and participate, because this is a participation show. I just forget when I'm talking to Michael.
Well, liberty is certainly a participation pursuit, because, you know, it's one thing to get yourself energized over an issue, but we need to come to understand what the real issue that underlies all of the public furor that we see. And when we come to understand how there is a manipulation of the social process in this country, we can be able then to identify how it is that we can use our talents and our interests to make a contribution to promoting the restoration of liberty.
Okay, well, we're going to take a quick break. And again, if you are interested in speaking with us, we're at 888-24-LIBERTY, and which is a great thing for me. When I'm not with you, I can be with you through my computer. You get on Freedom21SantaCruz.net, and you click on the Listen Live, and you can listen to us all over the place. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back after this. We're back. I'm talking with Michael Shaw about sustainable development. You know, Michael, the thing that continually, I don't know if it motivates and frustrates and fascinates me all at the same time, is how this sustainable development is like a weed, you know, with its roots just going all throughout our lives. You know, you talked about transportation, how the housing is woven together. We talked a little bit about our kids and what they're learning or being conditioned to learn in the school. What's the ultimate goal? I mean, you know, they want to put us in big housing tracks on the trains. Why?
Well, it's hard to say with precision what that goal would be, but it's become clear that there is a central and very intense money power in the world, made up of some multinational corporations, some foundations, American and European, and clearly the size and magnitude of government power today, where these monies all get focused from distant places into local action. The federal government has huge grant policies coming into your neighborhood. There is someone in your neighborhood receiving those grant policies. Some of them know the political philosophy behind sustainable development. Others just think they're doing good by taking Department of Labor money and putting out government propaganda in community newsletters. And different standards are applied when you've got to get that government message out, and transparency just isn't there. These people don't come forward and say, this is what I'm doing.
For people who are new to you know, hearing about sustainable development, what might they hear in their neighborhoods that, you know, that's happening, what you're talking about? I know here in Santa Cruz County we hear, you know, there's Action Pajaro Valley. There are community plans. What are some of the other words that people should tune their ear in so they can see what's happening in their communities?
Well, you need to look for words like visioning, or consensus. And you certainly need to watch your general plans, because general plans, which are state mandated, now are being very infiltrated and directed through these councils that are usually funded by the federal government. Here in Santa Cruz, we've had all kinds of councils, from a fire safe council that attempted to reduce fire hazards. Well, that sounds wonderful, but the way they were doing that was having the U.S. Department of Interior sitting in the county and getting our fire chiefs to agree to a set of best management practices that would keep the landowner from being able to manage his land to keep the fuel load down. And of course, that's the kind of program that's led to massive and catastrophic fires in the West, because landowners, through the Sustainable Development Environmental Arm, have been precluded from managing their land. The fire hazards have grown hazardous, and well, very bad, and when the fire comes, it's very catastrophic. So we're all feeling it in so many ways we don't know. We need to understand also that sustainable development isn't just a federal government plan. The federal government has adopted a global plan that is has been ushered in through the United Nations, sort of the front for this elite money power that is pushing this global central control. But our federal government is implementing what is a national plan, and it's hard not to examine our trade policies and our foreign policy, for that matter, in the context of what sustainable development or Agenda 21 on a global level is seeking to obtain. If the sustainable developers are willing to literally steal the rural lands and the farms, the ranches, the timberlands of American citizens, why is it that our foreign policy wouldn't have the same kind of objectives in Africa or in the Middle East? So one has to ask that question. I'm not proposing to answer it this evening, but let's be sure we understand that sustainable development is a centralized global plan for land use, education, and their third term, in their words, is population control. And of course, that's why we need to take it seriously, because once we vest the power in a partnership between government and business, then we're at the whim of who's ever behind that scheme, because it's not just spontaneous. It's not backed by the biggest muscle on the block. It is backed by the biggest muscle on the block, and we don't need to know who that is. We just need to know that political theory is a serious matter, and when you abandon your premises, then you abandoned your future.
Is it all part of, and this term has seemed to have come on the forefront in the last few years, is it part of the New World Order?
Well, I don't think there's any way that can be denied. George Bush let that term slip out, and he took a lot of grief for it. Then Bill Clinton came up with the term the third way. Well, that's the same thing. The third way is some combination of socialism and capitalism, but that's not really the truth. It's really the kind of global corporate socialism. So that was the Bill Clinton terminology for it. Both those terms got so beaten down that you didn't hear them for a long time. But people today are beginning to acknowledge that, sustainable development is the new world order.
Okay. What was interesting to me about that is that, it was kind of quiet, and now you hear... Part of the, everybody talks about, the New World Order, and how it's coming in. So this is just exactly what they're talking about.
Well, the New World Order is being ushered in, I'd say, primarily through trade policy. A new definition has been given to free trade. Now it's trade that is globally centrally managed by the World Trade Organization, that freely crosses national borders, which means, as Kent Snyder of the Liberty Caucus in Washington, D.C. told us, which means the end of national sovereignty. When you cannot establish your trade policy, certainly it's wise to not have protective tariffs, etc. But if you can't determine your trade policy at the national level, if it's determined for you at the international level, well, your sovereignty is gone. because your labor force, your products, your supplies, etc., are being determined outside. And that's what sustainable development's really all about. It's a combination of left-wing collectivists and right-wing collectivists. Those right-wing collectivists are trying to combine business with government, and the left-wing collectivists are out there like John Kerry playing the front man for George Bush. You know, he's just out there putting the environmental blocking and tackling on this effort to combine the resources of America, the resources of Africa, and the resources of the world under a global control.
You know, you were saying that what popped into my head was, you know, how now we see George Daddy Bush and Bill Clinton, the former arch enemies, going around the world, you know, doing their thing.
Well, you know, it's funny. It's not just the Democrats and Republicans. You know, I'm gonna respond to that by quoting a libertarian who was on C-SPAN not long ago, and he said, "Well, we're not in the age of division." He said, "We're in the age of consensus." So I think that's what Bush Sr. and Clinton are doing, is they're trying to give this appearance of consensus, meaning we'll all get along so long as you go along, because if you don't go along, well, you just won't do business, because we've got a new system of business that we call public-private partnership. We've got a new system of justice that we call social justice, never mind your equal rights. We're going to treat you as a member of a group and regard the environment as important as you, and adopt basically a Soviet system of justice. So that's the real workings of how sustainable development operates. And you say, well, no, Americans would never accept that. And I say, well, we have, under the guise of the environmental movement.
Wow. You know, again, you said social justice. And we're back. I was just about to say that you said something about social justice, and that's another term that has, you know, kind of risen and is becoming more of a topic of conversation kind of regularly. What is social justice?
Well, social justice would have the common good and not the protection of unalienable rights as its centerpiece. It really uses the law to engineer society rather than have government take its function under the American concept of protecting the rights of the citizen, the equal rights of the citizen. So it's a turning upside down of the system that this country was founded on, and of course that's why we're seeing so many people so frustrated with our justice system, because once you adopt a real system of social justice, logic and reason goes out the air, because you matter only in the context of your importance to the state, as determined by the state. So it's effective at causing the kinds of division. When they talk about diversity, they're really talking about division. Diversity has to be measured at a person-by-person level, not on a group basis. And so it's a whole different framework. It's the collective framework where none of us have an individuality. In fact, that's what collectivism does. It merges out our individuality and makes us conform to the political correctness. And that's how we're experiencing it in this stage of the development, the attempt to develop this classless society run by some elites.
Would that lead to something like redistribution of wealth for those who aren't part of the ruling class?
Well, redistribution of wealth is certainly part of it. But it's not it's not the focus of sustainable development, because there's going to be wealth really concentrated, and of course those great redistributionists are oftentimes foundations or nonprofits. And of course, they're escaping in NGOs. They're not paying any taxes to begin with, whether it's income or property. So, particularly in the case of the foundations, I mean, that's really driving this agenda. They have so much money that they've accumulated generation after generation without any tax paid, but they're the first ones to argue for redistribution for the working American in order to create this division between dependent Americans and productive Americans.
Who are some of, you talked about some of the foundations. I know you mentioned the Packard Foundation. Who are some of the other non-government agencies that are involved in sustainable development?
Well, the Rockefellers and Fords are certainly right there at the top.
The World Wildlife Fund.
World Wildlife Fund, Sierra Club, Nature Conservancy. Tim Finley, the tremendous reporter with Range Magazine, called the Nature Conservancy, he did the big expose on them, the most sinister company in America. That's quite a statement to say about some guys that are supposed to be saving nature. I mean, he is dead right on to that. Those guys are lawyers and brokers, and what they're doing is making big money for tying up America's resources in a partnership with the government. So you got to watch out for the environmental groups. You got to watch out for the other NGOs and the nonprofits. You know, when nonprofits are building subsidized housing at multiples of the cost of what it should be costing to build it, and they're doing that with largely taxpayer money and or foundation money, you got to ask, where is this going to lead? And I always say sustainable development is about blurring the boundaries and raiding the treasury. And you could pick up the newspaper any day and see these federal to local programs that are raiding the treasury. They're happening in every community across the country. And as our boundaries get blurred, meaning we lose our political boundaries, we lose our restraints on government, we lose our restraints on our moral interaction with each other, that's when you find a good society filled with good people having just fallen off the end of the cliff. And I think some people are beginning to worry about that, and clearly you can gather up all the riches of the country if you break their currency while after having put the nation and the people into debt. And I think that's a legitimate concern for people to begin to...
Yeah, I always like to give information for people locally, wherever they are. You know, and I'm just going to throw out some phrases or words and see if we're on the right track here. You know, I used to live in San Jose, and we all, you know, there was a group, group for the preservation of open space. And then there's another one, for the preservation of green hills. And now, you know, we're seeing a lot of historical preservation going on. Is this kind of all the same thing?
It's all the same thing. You know, if you trace the funding on that, there's always funding that is suspect when you understand the financing structure for sustainable development. And it doesn't mean that all the people have bad intent. Most of them don't know what they're doing, and it sounds great to preserve a forest. Of course, what you're doing is taking the resource out of the current or future use of the American people, because it ends up in a system of government ownership, government collateralization for our debt, and really at risk of just being shut off. In fact, the Sustainable Development Bible, the global assessment, biological assessment, a 1,200-page document that almost became a treaty for the United States, and yet we're implementing it anyway, it says that over 50% of the United States is to become off limits to human beings or to resource production. And we're seeing that happen. As our roads close, as our dams are broken, the attempt to create a water shortage by cutting us off from our supply is happening all over the state. If you open your eyes to it, this state and other states, if you open your eyes to it, sure, you need to create sources for water distribution, but we're taking our sources down in order to put people on a rationed water system within some period of time. And if you look at the legislature in California, our own local legislature here calls for the government ownership of all water. Well, that's a huge change in California law since the beginning of its time. And so the attack on water is part of the sustainable movement. And of course, if you can control the water, you can control the people. And that's a key methodology for Western populations.
Whew. Now, you know, you were talking about they're taking, have all these national parks and forests, and they're closing those down too.
Well, they're closing down all the time. We had Chris Horgan on talking about the circumstance down in Kern County in the Southern Sierras. And we could go to any county in the Sierras and find the same circumstance. Here in Santa Cruz County, use by use gets eliminated from the parks. And of course, the whole coast from the city limits of Santa Cruz to the county border over the last decade has been bought up by government or land trusts or other players in the sustainable development movement. That had all been private land. Now it's all NGO, government partnership land, and basically off limits to the people who paid for it, the taxpayer. And it's a case where everybody's losing. The lands aren't managed. The government cannot manage lands. Their lands burn. Their lands are fallow. Their lands are not productive or diverse. You know, and they can't afford the price they have to pay to steal the land, much less to take care of it.
Which leads me, you read minds, I think, too. I saw you do a presentation once, and you talked exactly about that with UC Davis and a project that they were doing on one of the freeways up near Davis. Talk about that.
Well, that's just a typical example of the kinds of outlays that are taxpayer outlays that are expended in order to keep, I just think of them as silly boys in employment. Yeah, you know, they get a PhD and now they're going to transplant some plants or something.
And a good grant writer.
Yeah, well, that's what they really rely yeah. on. It's a good grant writer. Well, there's a project by UC Davis, a 2-acre piece along the 505 freeway, where they decided to turn the pasture grass that lied along that freeway into California native grasses. So they spent $90,000 a year plowing and seeding, and they just have to keep plowing and seeding, and they get nowhere, but they are spending $90,000. The Audubon Society had $600,000 grant last year to work on the restoration of fish. This was a $300 million per year project. It's been going on for 8 years. That's $2.4 billion.
Cool.
To help the Delta Coho.
And there's no money, right?
Yeah.
We're in a money crisis.
Well, we're in a money, you know, it's a question of what you spend. And the spending is I think you could estimate that American governments at all levels spend around $5 trillion. Now, I can't think about how much money that really is, but much of that money, much of it, if you think about what government is authorized to do, much of that money is for the implementation of sustainable development. In other words, we're bankrupting ourselves to enslave ourselves through this process. Now, it can sound overwhelming, and you know, at first blush is. It's not something that when it hits you, you feel excited about. It's kind of like that worst conspiracy nightmare that Americans have been thinking about for decades and decades. Well, it turns out that, forget the conspiracy part, forget the theory part, it's a plan. It's called sustainable development. Its roots, its objectives are very clear. And the marketing, public persuasion, the brainwashing through our schools and through our media has just numbed us, sedated us to the reality that so many Americans have a sense about, and more people are kind of putting the pieces together and realizing that this left-wing, right-wing game that's being played between people who want to collectivize our action is really a deal between the two of them.
Talk about some of the movement that has happened across. You talked about Kern County. You know, they're waking up. I know you've been talking to some people from Florida, people from Texas. Talk about some of the things that are happening where people have realized and are starting to take action.
Well, I think the action, we're seeing the action in one way. Our guide for understanding sustainable development continues to pick up velocity in terms of the interest, and the people who are picking up 10 or 20 copies are coming back for, you know, dozens more. The awareness generally, the talk on the radios, has increased. You've got a book out right now, State of Fear by Michael Crichton, which is really a tremendous expose on the environmental side of the sustainable development movement. And he even talks about sustainable development and its nutty justice concepts called precautionary principle and the like. So those things are happening. The state of Oregon is in a virtual rebellion, and we'll be talking about that in the next hour. Those people are increasingly understanding the connection between their rural regulation, their Portland smart growth, and the globalist sustainable development movement. So that's good. People in Wisconsin have made some, they've staved off a lot of the smart growth planning there. There's a county in Virginia which has reversed all the smart growth ordinances in their county, seeing it as the cookie cutter of something that people don't like. And clearly people everywhere are starting to get a sense that the government's gotten a little too expansive and a little too controlling of their cities, and problems seem to be mounting in many regards. So in that sense, time is on our side. It's a matter of awakening the spirit and stimulating the thought process of the American people, because when we do, then we'll come together, realize that we're surrounded by orcs, but that we're all standing together. We're all together in the preservation of liberty for posterity and for our own lives. And at that point, there are answers. But it's a matter of getting to the point where people understand that we have been invaded with a political theory that will change America forever and make America like every other country in history, just ruled by power.
You said political, and that made me think of, you also have created a guide for political folks.
Yes, the guide is labeled Guide for Public Officials, but it's really for everybody. Mm-hmm. And as you get enough people in your community understanding it and able to sit down with good-spirited public officials, I mean, I think sometimes it's really rather hopeless. Some of these public officials know exactly what they're doing, and they're very well trained by the Democrat machinery, and they're very well trained by the Republican machinery to play two ends of the same game. But not everybody who's fallen for that would accept it if they understood the deep-seated nature of it.
And we have someone that's working real hard in Washington. His name escapes me. But what's he working on?
Congressman Paul?
Yes.
Well, I know he's working very diligently on the Mental Health Screening Act that passed in the last lame duck session. Something that never hit our newspapers, but all our children now are going to be mentally screened. This is part of the global education program, mentally screened for their health. And of course, this becomes a very subjective test. You can even look at the SAT tests, which have changed just this year. When I was a boy, it was that the SAT test had to be objectively measured, and they were always trying to find more objective questions. And that meant multiple choice and true-false. Well, now they've got one-third of the test in a subjective essay, right, on a matter of public policy. Now, it's just too easy to let philosophy creep into that to make me at all comfortable. So it's just step by step. No one thing in particular proves the point. As George Bush the First said, it's 1,000 points of darkness. And that's what they've got pointed at us. 1,000 points to just take the light out of our children and take the freedom out of the American experience.
Well, could you expand on that mental health thing? I think that might just kind of fly by people and think, that's probably okay.
Well, you know, this is to test them for attitudes, and if they're not passing the test, they'll be prescribed Ritalin or the like,
or some counseling. And then their parents have to come in.
Well,
everybody's not online, so we got to get you all online.
That's right. It's a matter of monitoring in order to control. In fact, monitoring is a steady word used by the sustainable developers, and Just yesterday, I think it was, the headlines in our local Santa Cruz newspaper is that Santa Cruz is to spearhead a diabetes registry.
A registry, well, another
that sounds nice, but the purpose of this is to take a federal grant for health screening all diabetics in the county so that they can keep, quote, tabs on patients who have failed to come in for a checkup and have not had their feet, eyes, or hearts examined. So we're going to monitor the diabetes people with federal grants to the county of Santa Cruz for $1.3 million. And this is the kind of program we'll see more and more of.
We'll be back. We're going to take a quick break right after this. With Michael Shaw, you know, I love that song. You know, he talks about the eco police, and after listening to you talking about the article, we're going to have the health police, and we're going to have the weed police, and you know, just going to be police too.
Yeah, well, and I'm old enough to remember when there was a patient doctor privilege, and now your information goes up so it says that any doctor can tune right into what your medical history is if you happen to be a diabetic. So we sacrifice the privacy in order to pay the tax so that the monitoring police can have more control. And of course, this is all insider stuff.
Again, you know, someone might have just happened on our conversations, you know, is it that big? I mean, what I'm getting to is, I guess people can look, and there are documents that people can actually go online and see this whole Agenda 21 and what all the sustainable development plan is.
Sure. You know, there's one in this town called the Local Agenda 21. I'm listed in that book. You can get that book at Freedom 21 Santa Cruz. The global governing documents are the Rio Accord, signed by George Bush Sr., the Biodiversity Assessment Report, which is being implemented, and the so-called Earth Charter, which has been endorsed by the League of Cities. Now, the Earth Charter is written by Stephen Rockefeller and Mikhail Gorbachev. It calls for the creation, it's still in its draft form, of a new set of commandments to replace the original ones. So it's a very serious thing that Americans have been fooled about, and as the word spreads, and that's really all it takes. It is a paper tiger. Now, someday, it's a paper tiger that will have grown real teeth. But it hasn't today. This is the time to do something about it. There are some difficult transitions that would need to be made, but we're on a path of unsustainability in a financial sense anyway, and I mean that in a real sense. You cannot spend as we're spending, especially on the kinds of programs it's being spent on, and continue that indefinitely. So there are going to have to be adjustments, and those adjustments are either going to be in the course of restoring liberty or in the context of falling into tyranny, because once the bottom falls out, boy, it's going to be very difficult. It won't, or the effort won't stop then. The hope continues. But now is the right time for more Americans to just swallow that pill, accept reality for what it is. Don't play the dialectic game. The liberals aren't the conservatives' enemy, and the conservatives, neither way.
They're not enemies.
We're not enemies. You know, we're Americans. If we respect the value of human life, if we respect each other, if we respect ourselves, then we have a common opponent, and that is the philosophy that sits behind sustainable development. And the way to read it out, the counties that will show themselves to be the leaders are those counties that stop taking federal funds. Now, the federal government can come in and grab money from your citizens in your county, but as soon as you stop taking the money back, that's where the strings come. Okay, that's where the contracts are made that lose your liberty. That's where the police state is able to grow from. So rejecting those federal programs is the course that county by county we need to begin to take.
We just had our governor return from a trip to get more federal money.
More free money.
Talk a little bit about your upcoming guests.
Well, in the next hour, we're going to have Dave Honeycutt, the executive director with Oregonians in Action, the people who brought Measure 37, which is a landmark initiative in the state of Oregon to set government back on its heels with some of its regulatory excesses.